The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus went across the Sea of Galilee. A large crowd followed him because they saw the signs he was performing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. The Jewish feast of Passover was near, and when Jesus raised his eyes and saw that a large crowd was coming to him, he said to Philip, "Where can we buy enough food for them to eat?" He said this to test him, because he himself knew what he was going to do. And Philip answered him, 200 days' wages worth of food would not be enough for each of them to have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what good are these for so many?" And Jesus said, "Have the people recline." Now there was a great deal of grass in that place, so the men reclined, about 5,000 in number. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed them to those who were reclining, and also as much of the fish as they wanted. When they had had their fill, he said to his disciples, "Gather the fragments left over so that nothing will be wasted." So they collected them and filled 12 wicker baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves that had been more than they could eat. When the people saw the sign he had done, they said, "This is truly the prophet, the one who is to come into the world." And since Jesus knew that they were going to come and carry him off to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain alone. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
What is Jesus' problem? You know, throughout all of Jesus' ministry, we hear about these events, him going through or going about working miracles, mighty deeds. And it's clear that he does them not just to show God's love and compassion for these particular people. Certainly that's true, but also so that we might come to believe in him and see that he's God with us and God to save us, and we might believe in him and trust in him and so be saved. And, you know, we see that throughout his ministry, how he's looking for that faith, that response on the part of us. How many times just with his apostles, he's chastising them or rebuking them for their lack of faith. Hear about him going back to his hometown of Nazareth and being amazed at their lack of faith and how he can only perform a few healings and not do mighty works there. And on the other hand, times where he is moved deeply by someone's great faith and points that out. Indeed, John's gospel, where we hear this account, he doesn't even call them miracles. He calls them signs, precisely to emphasize that fact that Jesus did these things so that we would come to believe in him. So we hear about this, I'm sure for many, perhaps all of us, well-known event in Jesus' life where he feeds 5,000 men, not including women and children. We're told in the other accounts, maybe, I don't know, 10,000 or more people. He feeds them all with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And their response is, "This is the prophet, not just a prophet, but the prophet." And as Jewish people, they were familiar with their faith and the promises of God in their faith, and so they're referring to a specific promise that God made through Moses. We go back to the book of Deuteronomy. That's basically just Moses speaking to the people before his death. They're on the edge of the promised land, and he knows he's about to die, and so he's reminding everybody of what God has done for them and the covenant that he's made with them and his promises to them and their promises to God. And amongst the many things that he speaks there, he talks about how God has promised that he will at some point send another prophet like Moses. And he is, the history of Israel is unfolded as spot of as the prophet. And here the people recognize he's the prophet and they're right. Jesus is that prophet. He's the fulfillment of that promise made hundreds, over 1,000 years before. And they recognize that. Indeed, we're told as well that Jesus knows that they want to make him king. He is king. And so, of course, Jesus says, yes, finally you got it. This work that I did for you wasn't just to fill your bellies, but it was to help you see who I am. No, he doesn't do that. We're told precisely because he knows that. We're told that Jesus, knowing that they want to make him king, he leaves, goes off, returns to the mountain alone. Why? Why would he do that? That suggests that it's because, though he is the prophet and he is king, he comes fulfilling those promises, and he comes as king in a very different way than they understood and imagined. And so he knows that he has to lead them to a different understanding of what that means. Understandably so, they're thinking that because he is going to be the prophet like Moses, and he's going to be the Messiah, the promised anointed one, the descendant of David, the king, that he's going to fulfill that and God's promises in basically the same way that Moses and David did. Moses is the one who took them out of slavery, crushing slavery under Egyptian rule. And he showed his mighty power over that foreign rule and the Pharaoh, and he crushed his army. And then, of course, he brought them to the promised land, a real land. And he drove out the nations that were there and gave them that land and created a nation out of them, a real nation, separate from all the other nations around. And he gave them rulers, and we know eventually he gave them kings. And, of course, all of that fell apart because they weren't able to live out the covenant. And so they were sent into exile, and the nation fell apart. And yet, their understanding, understandably so, was, well, the prophet, he's going to restore all of that, basically in the same way. Even his apostles thought that. Think about what some of them asked after his resurrection, before he ascended into heaven. He says, are you now finally going to restore the kingdom? And yet, Jesus was about something different. Different, but better. Better and greater than what they imagined or what they wanted or what they could have even asked for. How often that's true with Jesus and with God our Father, and how God is working to fulfill his promises to us. That he's doing it in a way that we don't always expect. But what he's doing is always better and greater than we could ask for. Though in the short term, sometimes it feels the opposite. Think of Peter. He points out Jesus is the Messiah. And Jesus affirms that. He actually says, only God the Father could have told you that. And then immediately after that, Jesus begins teaching them a little bit about what that means, and that he's come to die and rise, and that's how he's going to live out and fulfill that prophecy. And Peter says, God forbid, rebukes Jesus. No. Of course, Jesus has to correct him. It's true for the Jews in Jesus' ministry, but it can be true for all of us. Well, even when we get it right, when we recognize something true about Jesus, about God, that we still have to kind of be taught what that really means. Sometimes we have to be freed from an understanding that isn't quite correct. Their understanding was the Messiah was coming, that Jesus was coming for just this life, even for just the Israelites, and that he was going to restore the kingdom just as it was. And we know God was doing more than that. He was coming not just for the Israelites, but for all of humanity. And the fulfillment of the promise of a kingdom and a land for the people, that actually he's fulfilling that in a new heaven and a new earth. So for all of us, too, there's a call to have our perspective and our understanding changed, expanded, you might say. Realize we're not made just for this life. We're meant to live in this life. We're meant to be present in the moment, but to not live for the moment, but to live for heaven. And then what God is about redeeming all of humanity throughout all of history and fulfilling those promises in a new heaven and a new earth, in a life to come. That can be true sometimes in very personal ways or individual ways in our lives. Can also be true in how we understand and we think about nations and all of human history and how that's playing out. Jesus is king, and he has a kingdom, but it's not just for this life, and it's not a nation set up like all the other nations. And indeed, it's meant to happen in the midst of all of that. It's part of God's plan. Think about Pilate. Jesus said, in front of Pilate, said, you wouldn't have authority in this situation unless my Father had given it to you. Saying that part of God's plan of salvation for all of us is having nations and kingdoms exist. And it's not that God is condoning abuses of that authority, and we see it throughout. Pilate, from what we know of him, wasn't necessarily a good man, and he didn't use his position to do good all the time. Did a lot of evil in the Roman Empire. Maybe it brought a lot of good in some ways, but it did a lot of evil. And yet somehow God is working through that. And that's true throughout history in this lifetime. It's true of all nations. To be able to see God is not removed. He's very present, but how he's about is sometimes different than we would expect, but always better. So he's doing something greater and something more than we would expect. Wants us to help us to learn that. Maybe it's that I watch too many movies, but a scene from a movie came to mind in this regard again. I don't know if you've ever seen or heard The Princess Bride. It's a wonderful comedy, delightful in a lot of places, but at one point one of the bad guys, he keeps having their situations that happen that he doesn't like, and he keeps saying, inconceivable, inconceivable, and something happens, and again he says, inconceivable. And another thing happens, and he says, inconceivable, and one of the other bad guys with him says, I don't think that word means what you think it means. And that's God sometimes, that he's king. And yet sometimes he has to teach us, what does that mean? He is the prophet. He is the Messiah. What does that mean? God is good. Sometimes we get into situations where we feel like, how can God be good in this situation? And then we go back to how God has revealed himself. And you allow him to teach us and lead us, to trust in him. You know, an example in our own times of someone who I think exhibited this, who understood this and lived this out on a very big scale to be helpful for us, especially when it comes to thinking about countries and nations and politics and governments, is St. John Paul II. St. John Paul loved being Polish. He was Polish to every fiber of his being, from everything I know and read about him. And he never lost that. And he made that clear throughout his life. And he also didn't overlook problems and challenges in his own nation. Of course, he grew up during communism. He's experienced communism in his own life as an adult. And he worked against those evils in the government. But he also called his own people to conversion in various ways. But also his Pope, he never left Poland or being Polish behind, and yet he brought the good news to every nation. He traveled to more nations than any other Pope before him. And wherever he went, he always exhibited a great love and respect for that nation and encouraged the people in their nation that they would love their nation and what good things there were there, and also where there was a need for conversion, a need for work to be done. It's because he didn't allow his politics to inform his understanding of God and who Jesus was, but he allowed Jesus to inform him on who God was and how to live out his life, whether he was in Poland as a man from Poland or as Pope. He brought that to everything he did. It's a great example for us, being Catholic and allowing Jesus to lead us is at times allowing him to reveal who God is and what life is about in ways that we weren't thinking, to let go of other ways. But then as we do that, it allows us to live life better here and now. It truly allows us to be better citizens and countrymen and women of whatever country we're part of. Wherever you went, whether it's in Indonesia or the Congo or Mexico or the United States, just a few minutes, most of us are going to come forward and receive the body of Jesus, the Eucharist. We're going to hear about the rest of this chapter 6 in the coming weeks. Jesus used this opportunity as he fed the crowd, as he did this mighty work, to then follow up immediately after that to begin teaching them a little bit more about what it meant that he was the prophet and the king, and specifically his teaching about the Eucharist. He took their desire to be satisfied and trying to help them to see that deeper satisfaction that he brings. So we're told that they had their fill. In the Greek, it's like they were satiated. That's probably an experience that many of them were not familiar with. Usually when we sit down at the table, we have more than enough to eat. We can easily go away stuffed. Probably wasn't the case for most of those people in their life. They hardly ever had that opportunity. That's what they experienced. And understandably so, they said, I want more of that. We want you to be king. And yet Jesus immediately pointed them to the bread of life. Many of us hopefully have had experiences of God's mighty works in our lives. And how often God does those, not so then he can just let us stay where we are, but precisely so he can lead us to a deeper understanding of what's true and help us live it out. Maybe we haven't had those experiences. We're told that those crowds followed him and sought him out because they had heard and seen about what he had done in other people's lives. Maybe that's us. Maybe we've heard about what God had did in the lives of saints or other people around us. You can press in with confidence that God is going to break into your life. He is going to show his goodness and his power in some way. It's also to lead us. I remember years ago, I had an experience, someone sharing about how they went down to Mexico with a group to care for the poor, and how they were there. They were there at one of these, you know, trash dumps, not a landfill exactly, something not as well cared for as what we have in our country, but and how many people had to live there. And they went there to minister to them, to be with them, to feed them. And one meal, they brought the food that they had, but it was way short of what was needed for all the people there. And so they said a prayer and they started feeding them. And they were able to feed everyone, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and way more food than they had. And this gentleman was sharing and talked about how he was, as he began to feed everyone, kind of realizing what was going on. God was doing something mighty. Doing that certainly to show his care for those people, but also to show his presence. We have faith in him. It's a reminder to me, certainly at that time, I've never experienced that in my life, but that's how God works. And so let's ask for that grace as we press in, as so many of us will receive the Eucharist again, to bring him our desires, to bring him our faith, but also allow him to lead us, to reveal to us what it really means that he's King and that he's Lord. So as God's people, let us together profess our one faith.